This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Podcast of Audio Reading Service volunteers reading the Journal Gazette is provided by the Allen County Public Library for the sight and print impaired and made available with the permission and cooperation of the Journal Gazette.
We're back from our break. We're reading the Living section from the Monday, May 6th Journal Gazette. And here is Anita with the horoscopes.
Today's horoscopes by Holiday Mathis. Aries. Your attention to health and vitality will lend variety to the day. In earlier times, you would be foraging for this, but now you're reading labels and clarifying terms. It's a rabbit hole and a very interesting one. Taurus, you've an exceptional talent for planning, specifically chunking down big projects into doable tasks. With humor and charm, you will keep everyone engaged in your world and work. Gemini, improving self-control is not so hard. It's removing every temptation that's the hard part. Thereafter, the rest is easy. To dance around the same thing you're trying to abstain from is silly, if not cruel. Cancer, what are the methods you're using to monitor your progress toward a goal? Decide early on so you can check in on your results a few times during the course of this highly productive 24-hour period. Leo, generosity resonates on deep, intangible levels, recognized by individuals with the capacity to feel it. Like an elephant, you can sense the lower notes that other creatures can't hear at all. Those with a generous spirit can feel the tone. Virgo, you'll view others through a lens of optimism, expecting the best from them. Someone may fall short of these expectations, but time is a potent remedy, gradually revealing hidden depths and surpassing initial impressions. Libra, when was the last time you faced yourself in a mirror like they do in the movies to give yourself the you-to-you talk? It's been a while, and the time has come to get into it again with positivity and kindness. Scorpio, make your intentions clear and avoid setting up expectations you can't or won't want to fulfill. It's better to do little and promise nothing than to get mixed up in something that will make next week stressful. Sagittarius, your priorities are different than they've been in recent times. The early signs of a larger shift that's coming over the next 3 months. Transitions can be tough. Give this emerging you a lot of love. Capricorn, question authority, especially your own. Every power move is a mighty responsibility, too. These are not casual decisions to make, though it may be cool to plan it and then make it look casual. Aquarius, you can read a room. You look around and assess what people are thinking and feeling and wanting. You'll use this information to get your best possible outcome. Pisces, new and challenging circumstances have a way of inciting unhelpful mental chatter. For clarity, subdue the noise with deep breathing while you calmly observe the scene. And for today's birthday, it's a year when people roll out the red carpet for you, work extra hard to stay in business with you, and create events and memories to make you smile. More highlights? Leisure gets exciting. Shared challenges feed excellent relationships. You'll complete an important project that gives a new direction to your work. Pisces and Gemini adore you. Your lucky numbers are 18, 3, 33, 1, and 17.
And now for the Heloise column. Revamp teaching for success. Today's sound-off is about reassessing our methods of teaching students. Dear Heloise, I've been retired from teaching for about 3 years now, and I can tell you that classrooms need to change. Teachers need more authority, more money, and more cooperation from parents and the school district administration. We need to start failing students who don't make the grade and have them repeat or attend summer school to make up for their bad grades. Lining students up in neat rows and expecting them to learn is boring to them. Why not use a semicircle of rows like colleges do? And while I'm at it, why should high school end at 3 p.m.? There's really no reason to end at 3 p.m. We could continue until 4 p.m. with subjects like computer science, writing, or any number of topics that will help them in the real world. There needs to be stricter discipline in schools as well, learning that the world does not revolve around them and that self-discipline keeps them from giving in to every whim without thought will do more to help them in life than a teacher who allows a student not to do homework or come to class. If we don't revamp our educational system, we will fall further and further behind compared to the rest of the world. Let's prepare our students for the life that they will lead in the future. The more they know, the better off they will be. Maybe we can instill a love of learning in them and a sense of curiosity that will help them in their careers. You just never know who might be the next Einstein. And that was from a reader in Indiana. And a second letter. Dear Heloise, my kids are 5, 7, and 8 years old. They are young, but still old enough to know that bacteria can get on their hands. To get them to wash properly, I added some pink food colouring into the clear hand soap in my bathroom. My youngest loves it because she thinks she's applying makeup to her skin when she washes. My older kids think it's some kind of new and improved soap from Violet Inn in Titusville, PA. Dear Heloise, I had a large ceramic teapot I loved. I bought it in Ireland and the sight of it brought back lovely memories. One day I accidentally dropped the lid and it broke, but I just couldn't bring myself to toss it out. So I tied a thin rope around the handle and hung it on a tree just outside my kitchen window. I have a bird living in there now, and I'm thrilled by my makeshift teapot birdhouse from Lisa D. in Mansfield, Ohio. Dear Heloise, I do volunteer work at a nursing home, and so many of our residents are in need of something to do. If any of your readers would like to donate books, family games, or even puzzles, most nursing homes would love to have them, from Gloria B. in Portland, Oregon. And you can send a hit to heloise@heloise.com.
This is the Ask Amy column by Amy Dickinson. Today's is titled, Divorcing Dad Must Put Son First. Dear Amy, my wife and I are divorcing after 23 years of marriage. I am moving out soon. We have a 21-year-old son. I talked with him about it, and while he's angry, he says he understands. The problem, however, is that my marriage was bad for a very long time, and I fell in love with another woman. My wife refers to me as an adulterer. She has said this to my son. How can I help him understand that I am not an adulterer? I want to have a great relationship with my son. I never want to leave him, but his mother has somewhat poisoned him. How do I explain things to him? And this is from No Longer Lonely in Long Island. And Amy's response, Dear No Longer Lonely, in the shorter term, you should focus less attention on justifying or trying to redefine your behavior and focus more attention on your son. Please understand that any younger person, when facing extreme change, thinks, but what about me? Your son's first concern is, and should be, more on his own happiness and future than on yours. And right now, because of this breakup, your son has about 10 times more relationship challenges than you do. He has to somehow navigate having a separate relationship with his angry, bitter, and betrayed mother, and his liberated, self-focused, and, I assume, abundantly happy father. I'm trying to figure out what about your behavior does not constitute adultery, so perhaps you should simply cop to this. I assure you that every spouse who has ever exited their marriage via another relationship has justified it by pointing to their own unhappiness. But the order of marriage exit is supposed to be decide to separate, move out, divorce, new relationship. Do your best to create a lot of space for your son to say whatever he needs to say. Absolutely correct the record if the narrative has strayed completely from the truth, but invite him to ask you any question and answer him truthfully. My suggestion is that you not criticize his mother for feeling betrayed, even if she unfairly lashes out. Her feelings are her feelings. And you should say only that you're sorry she's feeling so sad and you wish she wouldn't draw your son into her sadness. Do not fling your new relationship into his path, compare your new woman to his mother, or ask him to be happy for you. Apologize to him for disrupting his life in this way and assure him that you will always be in his corner, no matter what.
Now for To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Does intermittent fasting raise the risk of heart disease? Dear Dr. Roach, I read recently that people who fast intermittently have an increased risk of heart disease. Is that true? From KOS. And Dr. Roach answers, intermittent fasting is an increasingly common weight loss strategy. The two most common approaches of intermittent fasting are alternate day fasting, eating nothing one day, then whatever you want the next, and time-restricted feeding, eating at certain times in the day, usually in an 8-hour time frame. The published data on the benefits of these diets show short-term weight loss, i.e. over 12 weeks, but no long-term weight loss, i.e. over 1 year, compared to standard dietary advice. There is evidence of potential harm from intermittent fasting. Studies have shown an increased risk of eating disorders, particularly binge eating. One study showed that disordered eating worsened in those assigned to an intermittent fasting schedule. Other studies do not confirm this. The concern for disordered eating is highest among younger and female populations who are most at risk for eating disorders, and I advise against intermittent fasting for a person with such a history. The study you read about was presented as an abstract in the March meeting of the American Heart Association. It is not yet published or peer-reviewed, but it did show that people who report an intermittent fasting diet, specifically those who ate over an 8-hour time frame, were at a higher risk for death from heart disease than those who ate over a 12 to 16-hour time frame. However, this wasn't a controlled study, and it is likely that people who chose a time-restricted eating pattern already had issues that put them at a higher risk for heart disease. Still, given the absence of long-term benefits, I don't generally recommend a time-restricted diet or intermittent fasting. My colleagues in weight medicine consider intermittent fasting to be an option that helps a subset of people. There are some people who do benefit from this type of diet, and as they are eating well and are being monitored by their physician, they should continue to follow their diet if it is working for them. You can write to Dr. Roach at 628 Virginia Drive, Orlando, Florida, or email toyourgoodhealth@med.cornell.edu.
This is the Education Notebook in today's paper, Trying Students Create New Reading Tool, by Ashley Sloboda of the Journal Gazette. Kindergartners at a Steuben County school have a new tool to help them learn to read. Trine University students last month introduced Leanne Lee's class at Fremont Elementary School to BabbleBot, an online application featuring a character of the same name, the Angola-based college said in a news release. The virtual character generates customized stories and pictures using units of sound and sight words students need to practice, the release said. As students read aloud, the application records and transcribes their reading for teacher evaluation. Eric Bryan, the school principal, said in a statement that BabbleBot stemmed from science of reading sessions Trine hosted last summer with grant funding from Lilly Endowment Incorporated. I volunteered to be a guinea pig, Bryan said. The idea behind it is to streamline processes and gather data that's going to help us drive instruction. The science of reading is based on teaching to read with sound combinations rather than pictures, Lee said in a statement. As the text becomes more complex, she said, students can't rely on pictures, so they need to decode and read and sound out the words. Lee said BabbleBot lets her students practice those skills. A team of computer science and information technology majors, Connor Heitman, Kaiser Albergetz, and Aaron Rost, created the application, which uses artificial intelligence, the release said. It noted each of the trine students has relatives who work in education. Knowing how hard it can be to help kids be engaged in the classroom, I wanted to be a part of a team that makes learning fun, Rust said in a statement. Also, being able to look over the work for all of the students in the classroom at once would be amazing for teachers, taking off a whole workload on their busy schedules. Heitman said in a statement that the project helped him understand the importance of building an inclusive platform that recognizes that students learn differently. An app of this nature needs to encourage students to learn rather than discourage, Heitman said. The Trine students consulted Lees during the design process and made changes based on the feedback, the release said. Brian said new tools are needed to help educators teach reading. Our reading skills are low across the state, he said. And the question is, what can we do to build a better foundation of reading to help our kids be more successful? From Bluffton, the Bluffton-Harrison Metropolitan School District School Board hired Holden Berlin as the next director of bands for the district schools. He joins the district from Blackford High School, where he has led the band program for 5 years. He succeeds Jim Buter, who is retiring after 26 years. The position serves the district's secondary schools and leads the Bluffton Bengal Brigade Marching Band and the high school pep band. Event: Verstein Institute will bring its Shoresh International Workshop to Fort Wayne from July 8th to 12th at Northside High School, 475 East State Boulevard. The Verstein Method is an educational technique developed by psychologist Reuven Verstein. It is a process-based approach focusing on developing the skill of learning how to learn, subsequently tapping into an individual's latent intellectual capabilities. Sessions will be led by local, national, and international experts. The MindCap Center and North American Verstein Alliance are hosting the event. For information or to register, visit verstein-institute.org/workshops/Shoresh or contact Jean Zehr at jean@mind-cap.org or call 260-704-3336 or 260-271-4650. From Huntington, Huntington University students received 25 awards, including the Best in Show and Judges' Choice Student Awards during the American Advertising Federation Fort Wayne's annual advertising honors. Yu Wang, a visiting instructor of graphic design, also received 2 professional awards. From Ivy Tech, Indiana high school students can earn college credits for free this summer from Ivy Tech Community College. Its 19 campuses will offer free tuition and textbooks to all eligible Hoosier high schoolers. Visit ivytech.edu/freecourses for information. Recognition. A Homestead High School team is among 100 national finalists in the American Rocketry Challenge. The competition is scheduled for May 18th in the Plains, Virginia, just outside Washington, D.C. Teams will compete for $100,000 in prizes, along with the national champion title and an all-expense-paid trip to the International Rocketry Challenge in England this summer. The top 25 teams will receive invitations to NASA's Student Launch Workshop. The Southwest Allen County School students are the only finalists from Indiana. They are advised by teacher Mark Lenfesti. Carroll High School's varsity and junior varsity winter guards won their respective divisions at the Indiana High School Color Guard Association state finals in March. Rama Kusick, an associate professor at Purdue University Fort Wayne, received a Purdue University Focus Award. The awards have been presented annually since 2001 to those affiliated with Purdue who have made an outstanding contribution to the system's commitment to disability accessibility and disability diversity. William Sauerland, John Lemaster, and Julia Smith received featured faculty awards from Purdue Fort Wayne. The honor recognizes faculty members' outstanding performance in research, scholarly activity, creative endeavors, teaching, or engagement. Purdue Fort Wayne honored Jason Moyer with the All Professional Staff Advisory Council Excellence Award. Benjamin Newhouse and Tamara Davich received the Campus Support Staff Advisory Committee Excellence Awards. Scholarships. Citizens and the United Negro College Fund will accept applications through midnight May 13th for the Citizens Helping Citizens Scholarship. The program will award need-based scholarships to 10 high school seniors from underserved and historically underrepresented communities. Visit opportunities.uncf.org. Ivy Tech Community College Fort Wayne and Warsaw will accept applications for the Mark M. Sudhoff Endowed Scholarship Chancellor's Merit Award through May 15th. The Full Ride Scholarship is annually awarded to two high school seniors planning to attend Ivy Tech to seek their first associate degree. Visit link.ivytech.edu/merit award or call 260-480-2010 for information. Paulding Putnam Electric Cooperative awarded a $1,000 scholarship to Corrine Bowers of Heritage Junior Senior High School, an $800 scholarship to Jacob Kitson of Van Wert High School in Ohio, and a $600 scholarship to Jamie Hunt of Paulding High School in Ohio. The Noble County Farm Bureau awarded a $1,000 scholarship to Carolyn Egolf of Churubusco Junior Senior High School and $500 scholarships to Andrea Weaver of West Noble High School and Paige Hopf of Central Noble Junior Senior High School. Trine. Trine University has received a $750,000 grant from Lilly Endowment Incorporated through its Advancing the Science of Reading in Indiana initiative. The grant will support science of reading initiatives that the university's Frank School of Education will carry out during the next 3 years. And nominations and submissions. Students and parents who have a favorite teacher or school employee can nominate the individual for teacher honor roll or staff honor roll. Educators and school employees can nominate students for student spotlight to acknowledge their leadership or contributions. Send nominations to the Journal Gazette, 600 West Main Street, Fort Wayne, 46802, or fax 461-8893, or email aslaboda@jg.net. Include the nominee's name, school, your name, contact information, and reason for the nomination. To submit an item, send a typed release from the school or organization to Education Notebook, the Journal Gazette, 600 West Main Street, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 46802. Fax 461-8893 or email aslaboda@jg.net at least 2 weeks before the desired publication date.
And now some items from the community update, starting with camps. Summer Day Camp. Camp Trillium takes children on a journey through Indiana's natural splendors and historical wonders at LC Nature Park, 9744 Aboit Road in Roanoke. The park is a 300-acre nature preserve. 5-day sessions begin June 10th and are offered through July 26th. Costs are $130 for children entering kindergarten in the fall. Those sessions are from 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Older students, up to those entering 7th grade in the fall, pay $180 a week and attend 8:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Activities include hiking, exploring pond and stream life, including a mud kitchen, outdoor nature-based games, and crafts. You can visit the website at lcnaturepark.org or look them up on Facebook or call 260-999-3153 for schedule updates and information. And classes, Rain Barrel Workshop. This make and take class is to assist backyard conservation efforts, which can help protect streams and rivers. Rain barrels collect rainwater and decrease the amount of stormwater runoff from properties. Two identical classes are being offered, 9 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. Saturday. the St. Joseph River Watershed Initiative and the Cedar Creek Project Steering Committee are hosting the event at the Tom and Jane Dustand Nature Preserve, 1992 Chapman Road, Huntertown. The cost is $20 per barrel and registration is required. Go online and Google Rain Barrel Workshop. We will now read editorials for Monday, May 6th. The opinions expressed are those of the writers and not necessarily the opinions of the Audio Reading Service, the Allen County Public Library, Northeast Indiana Public Radio, PBS Fort Wayne, or your readers, Giles or
Anita. Beginning with Columbus Architecture, A Welcome Diversion for an In-State Getaway by Nikki Kelly, who is editor of the Indiana Capital Chronicle, where this originally appeared. She covered the State House for the Journal Gazette from 1999 to 2022. Heading into election week, I wanted to slow it down with a focus on what Indiana has to offer Hoosiers and tourists. Last year, I visited Madison and was taken by the quaint town. I also promised to do more things that Indiana has to offer, and that led me to Columbus. My sister-in-law Julie met me in between our two homes for a much-needed girls' trip. We started these trips after my brother, her husband, died in 2016. The first one was on the one-year anniversary of his passing and was meant to be a way to cope with that difficult time. Washington, D.C. was the first of our sojourns, and we've been going strong ever since. Sometimes the trips are small and more local, such as French Lick or Chicago, and sometimes they're farther away, like Toronto and Philadelphia. Julie had no idea what I was roping her into with this one, but we found a cute Airbnb and had a blast. I crowdsourced some restaurant recommendations, and we ended up at Upland's Pump House on Friday night. The place was hopping, and I can't recommend the whipped feta enough. It was a great atmosphere in a historic refurbished building. There are also some lovely photos to be had if you venture down by the water the restaurant overlooks. But please be smarter than me and wear proper footwear. The next day we headed to a tour of Columbus. I had been hearing for years about how the city of around 50,000 had become a surprising hub of architecture, and I was fascinated to find out how that happened. The American Institute of Architects ranked it 6th in the nation for architectural innovation and design, right behind Chicago, New York, Boston, San Francisco, and Washington, D.C. The visitor's guide lists more than 90 buildings and pieces of public art by internationally noted architects and artists. The two-hour tour introduced us to the likes of Elil Saarinen, Eero Saarinen, Kevin Roach, I.M.P., Harry Weiss, and Deborah Burke. But mostly I was fascinated by the public-private partnership created by the Cummins Foundation. Cummins' former chairman and CEO J. Irwin Miller wanted to help the community by providing an alternative to the standard but uninspired school buildings being built across the U.S. in the late 1950s and early 1960s. So in 1957, the Cummins Foundation made its first grant to support architecture fees for the Lillian C. Schmidt Elementary School, designed by Weiss. The architecture program became a formal part of the Cummins Foundation in 1960, with a grant for Northside Middle School. It began with schools, but later grew to encompass all facilities in the county owned and operated by public tax dollars. Everywhere you turn in Columbus, there is an interesting structure. It's a feast for the eyes. Now, not all of them are my aesthetic. The churches, First Christian Church and North Christian Church, were striking architecturally, but not as warm as you would hope. The love of architecture has also morphed to the city embracing public art as well, my favorite being the sculpture Eos. The Bartholomew County Memorial for Veterans was also remarkable. My one complaint about Columbus, uneven sidewalks, took me out, so we missed our second tour of the famed Miller House while I iced a knee. But we made it back out later for a little shopping and ice cream. I've been to Zaharakos several times to cover political events, whether it be a meet and greet with Mike Pence or Ted Cruz and his daughters choosing their favorite flavors. But I hadn't learned about its history or enjoyed the amazing ice cream itself until now. For dinner, I followed another restaurant recommendation, and we had pizza and breadsticks from Zhuang Zig Zi. So tasty. Here's hoping you take the opportunity to learn more of what your own state has to offer with trips like this. And featured with this article is a photo of a large arch, and in the background, through the arch, you can see a tall building. Hard for me to describe, but it says a large arch perfectly frames the bell tower of the First Christian Church in Columbus. The church was the first contemporary building in the city designed by Eliel Saarinen.
And now, five questions for Lindsay Hanna. Lindsay is the Vice President of Investor Engagement of Greater Fort Wayne. Question one. Can you describe the main goals of the intern experience program and how it was conceived to address the brain drain problem? Answer. Absolutely. The main objective of the intern experience is to help college students fall in love with Fort Wayne and see themselves living, working, and thriving here. We do this through bi-weekly social events highlighting hotspots throughout the city. These events not only give these students the opportunity to meet other interns, but also opportunities to meet community leaders and learn about Fort Wayne's future. The more we can share about our community's momentum, the more they can see themselves being a part of a city on the rise, which will help reverse the trend of brain drain. Question 2. What are some of the highlights and critical outcomes you've observed after last year's pilot? Answer. We were blown away by the number of students who registered and where they were originally from. We had an initial goal of 100 interns and actually had 220 from 23 states and 8 different countries. It was encouraging to see the number of Fort Wayne companies recruiting talent from all over the world. Now, our job at GFW Inc. is to help these students want to return to be our next leaders. On a fun note, another thing we noticed was how the pizza we went through and how college students love free merch or giveaways. Question 3. How does the program integrate experiences at local attractions such as the Fort Wayne Children's Zoo and Electric Works into its strategy to connect interns to the community? Answer. Fort Wayne has many great places to experience the city in different ways. In our planning phase, we were intentional on highlighting the must-see attractions while mixing in a few others. This is a way for them to see the growth of Fort Wayne, Allen County, all over, not just in a specific area. The partners at these locations have been extremely supportive, like Rick Schutterman from the zoo. He moved here a few years back and is anxious to see others fall in love with Fort Wayne like he has. Question 4. What kind of feedback have you received from the interns and participating companies? Answer. Last year, we surveyed the students pre- and post-program and were blown away by the positive feedback. Their perception of Fort Wayne in Indiana grew 18.6% by the end of the program. In addition to the success, we also received areas where we can improve. For example, they enjoy networking, but they ask for more opportunities to meet community leaders. We're bringing that to them this year. And I can't forget the participating businesses. They have been our biggest supporters, as they are simply thankful that someone's addressing the need of retaining young talent. We often say we want the interns to fall in love with the companies during the day, and our job is to help them fall in love with Fort Wayne. Question 5. How can local businesses and organizations get involved with Greater Fort Wayne's intern experience? Answer. Local businesses can get involved by going to intern.gfwinc.com to download a flyer highlighting all the necessary information needed. Please include this flyer in any intern onboarding processes. It includes a QR code where the interns can register for the program and see the events planned. And the best part, there's no cost for the business or intern. This program is funded by grants and sponsorships. If your company is interested in supporting, please contact me at lhanna@greaterfortwayneinc.com. We've got no letters to the editor in today's newspaper, so we will be continuing the segment with some articles left over from Saturday's weekend edition of the Journal Gazette.
This is an editorial from the Los Angeles Times titled, "Welcome Advances in Traffic Safety." By the end of the decade, new cars and trucks will be required to have automatic emergency braking systems that can save hundreds of lives each year. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, which announced the requirement Monday, called it the most significant safety rule in two decades. But why did it take so long? This technology has been available for years, though it often sold as a luxury feature. Most automakers voluntarily include some form of automatic braking in new models, but the capabilities can vary. The regulation makes the technology mandatory by 2029 and sets a minimum standard. Car makers have been slower to install automatic braking designed specifically to detect and avoid pedestrians, a problem because pedestrian fatalities have been increasing. The regulation will require that vehicles be able to avoid hitting pedestrians when traveling up to 40 miles an hour and detect pedestrians in the dark when more than three-quarters of such fatalities occur. Since the 1980s, the number of people killed each year in car crashes has declined, thanks in part to safety requirements. That decline stalled a decade ago, and traffic deaths spiked in 2020 and 2021. Experts attribute the rise to an increase in speeding and reckless and distracted driving. Automatic braking is projected to save about 360 lives a year. There were 41,000 vehicle fatalities in 2023. Automatic braking is just one safety feature. The federal government should be far more aggressive in promoting and requiring others. Limiting heavier, taller trucks and SUVs that take longer to stop and strike with more force, and reducing reliance on dashboard touchscreens that require drivers to take their eyes off the road. Last year, the National Transportation Safety Board recommended, it doesn't have the power to require, that all new cars have systems to alert drivers when they are speeding. Such systems are required for new cars sold in the European Union starting in July. There is no reason for Americans to tolerate 41,000 traffic deaths a year. Most are preventable, and there are tools and design features available to make vehicles safer for everyone on the road. We just have to demand them.
And now, an editorial from Saturday's paper called Wise Up, The State Has a Chance to Reverse Its Greatest Educational Area, by Michael J. Hicks. Michael J. Hicks is the director of the Center for Business and Economic Research and a professor of economics at Ball State University. Indiana is in the process of revamping its high school curricula. This could be a superb opportunity to rethink some fundamentals about schooling, its role in society, and the needs of the future economy. It is also a good time to recenter the long-term well-being of students into the discussion. However, the last time Indiana made significant changes to the school curriculum, we failed badly. That cannot happen again. In December 2013, then-Governor Mike Pence announced an ambitious plan to offer more career-focused education to Hoosier High School kids who weren't going to college. It was a smart, thoughtful, and much-needed addition to our educational landscape. I was an enthusiastic supporter. Almost from the beginning, the execution of that plan was botched. It is worth recounting how a very good idea became a very bad public policy, and how the accumulated mistakes of a decade continue to haunt Indiana's economic performance, even now and into the distant future. The Mitchell Daniels era education reforms were successful on almost every important measure. The push for higher standards revealed itself in test scores, graduation rates, and college attendance and success. They strengthened good local public schools and forced bad ones to change. But not everyone wishes to go to college, and for three generations, we'd cut programs for those students. Pence's plan was met with strong support by businesses, which offered free curriculum in STEM and support for students wishing a career route. My school corporation, led by Jennifer McCormack, developed an award-winning program with a local manufacturing firm. Things started off well. Then the Department of Workforce Development began to push the State Board of Education. That's all we've got time for on that article. If you'd like to hear the rest of the article, please call the station on 260-421-1376 and it can be read to you. We will now read primetime TV listings for Monday, May 6th.
Beginning on CBS this evening at 8 o'clock is Neighbor. At 8:30, Bob Hart's Abishola. 9 o'clock is NCIS, and at 10, NCIS Hawaii. On ABC this evening, 8 to 9 is Jeopardy! Masters, Games 3 and 4. From 9 to 10, Wheel, and 10 to 11 is Press Your Luck. On NBC, from 8 until 10 is The Voice, the live top 12 performances. And from 10 to 11, Deal or No Deal Island. On PBS this evening, two episodes of Antique Roadshow, one from 8 to 9, the next from 9 to 10, and at 10 p.m. is Independent Lens. And on Fox this evening, we begin with MasterChef from 8 o'clock till 9 o'clock, So You Think You Can Dance from 9 to 10. And at 10 p.m. is Fox 55 News, first at 10.
We're going to read a few local sports highlights next, but if you love sports, tune in Mondays at 1:30 and 10:30 p.m. and Tuesdays at 6 a.m. for Spotlight on Sports with stories from Sports Illustrated magazine. Or tune in every Sunday afternoon at 4:30 p.m. and Monday mornings at 6 a.m. and listen to a full hour of the past week's local, regional and national sports stories during Sports in Review. And now we'll read a few highlights from several local sports stories for you, starting with
a few news briefs. Tin Caps get shut out, 11th loss in 13 games. The Tin Caps managed only three hits in the finale of their seven-game series against the Lake County Captains on Sunday and fell 6-0 at Classic Auto Group Park for their 11th loss in 13 games. Lake County, 16-11, won five of the seven games in the series and sent Fort Wayne, 10-17, into sole possession of last place in the Midwest League East. In college briefs, Irish women add transfer. Notre Dame women's basketball added a highly coveted transfer with the addition of 6'2", fifth-year senior forward Liza Carlin out of Marquette. Carlin played four seasons for the Golden Eagles, appearing in 115 games, starting 85 and scoring 1,294 points. This past season, she averaged 17.7 points, 7.9 rebounds, and 2.1 assists while shooting 49.7% from the floor and 35.7% from beyond the three-point line on the way to first-team All Big East honors. Carlin has 1 year of eligibility left. In golf, Strasser wins Little City. Johnny Strasser Jr. won the Touche Performance Flight at the Little City Tournament in its first season being run by the Three Rivers Tour after a move from the Fort Wayne Golf Association. Strasser had a two-day score of 127 at McMillan Golf Course. In hockey, two leave Comets to play in Europe. Tor Linden, who starred for the Comets as a rookie forward this season, has signed to play next season for Mora IK, a team in Sweden. Goaltender Tyler Parks, meanwhile, is headed to Austria. Mora IK, which is coached by longtime NHL goaltender Johan Hedberg, announced the signing of Linden on Saturday. Parks' commitment to play for the Vienna Capitals was finalized April 25th. In tennis, Madrid Open. Despite sleepless nights struggling with a fever, Andrei Rublev found a way to fight back and win the Madrid Open for the first time. Rublev was feeling sick all week but rallied to beat Felix Auger-Aliassime in three sets Sunday and clinch his second Masters 1000 title. Rublev won 4-6, 7-5, 7-5.
And going back to golf, Canadian gets first victory on PGA Tour, Dateline McKinney, Texas. Taylor Pendrith tried his best to ignore Ben Cole's final hole meltdown, focusing on the eagle putt that the Canadian thought he might have to make even to force a playoff as he walked towards the 18th green. Several stunning minutes later, a three-footer for birdie gave Pendrith his first PGA Tour victory. Coles overtook Pendrith with birdies on numbers 16 and 17 for a one-shot lead, then bogeyed the 18th after hitting his second shot into greenside rough. Already in shock following two chips from the rough, the second with his feet in the bunker, Coles missed a six-foot putt that would have forced a playoff. Pendrith shot 4-under 67 for a 23-under 261 total at the TPC Craig Ranch. The 32-year-old won in his 74th career PGA start.
Assad comes up aces as Cubs blank Brewers, from the Associated Press, Dateline Chicago. Javier Assad pitched six sparkling innings, and the Chicago Cubs beat Freddy Peralta and the Milwaukee Brewers 5-0 on Sunday in the rubber game of their weekend set. Assad, 3-0, allowed four hits, struck out four, and walked three, lowering his ERA to 1.66. The right-hander has permitted two or fewer runs in each of his seven starts this season. He's just got weapons that just don't let the hitter get comfortable ever, Cubs manager Craig Counsell said. Chicago posted two straight wins against Milwaukee after losing 3-1 on Friday. The starting pitchers for the Cubs combined for 18 and a third scoreless innings in the series, allowing a total of nine hits. We have a great group of pitchers in the rotation, in the bullpen as well, Assad said through a translator. So it's really great just to go out there and see them pitch and feed off each other.
And Formula One motor racing. Norris end Verstappen's dominance with first career F1 victory in Miami. Dateline Miami Gardens, Florida. Lando Norris should take a lesson from his last big party and perhaps tone down the celebration for his first career Formula One victory. His reaction following the Sunday victory in the Miami Grand Prix showed the British driver probably doesn't plan to miss a beat. Norris won in his 110th career start after a mistake by Max Verstappen ended Verstappen's dominance at the circuit in the parking lot surrounding Hard Rock Stadium. The 24-year-old driver sprinted down pit lane to leap into the arms of his McLaren crew, which crowd-surfed Norris until he finally got to boss Zak Brown, who wrapped Norris in a bear hug. Verstappen, who started from pole in one Saturday's sprint race, was out front when he hit his chicane and knocked a cone out of place on the circuit. It forced the three-time reigning F1 champion to pit and give Norris the lead. Norris then controlled the race to give McLaren its first win since a Daniel Ricciardo victory in 2021. Ricciardo was among the handful of drivers who found Norris for a congratulatory hug following the race.
Panthers, Bruins set to meet again, from the Associated Press, Dateline Sunrise, Florida. There are no shortage of storylines for this Florida-Boston rematch. There's the Panthers, trying to move another step closer toward a return to the Stanley Cup final. There's the Bruins, looking to average a shocking upset in a round one series last season. The rested Panthers have just gotten a few days off, the razor-sharp Bruins rolling in after a Game 7 overtime win over Toronto. Florida coach Paul Maurice summed it all up succinctly. None of that matters when the puck drops, Maurice said. He's probably right. A second-round series between the Panthers and Bruins starts tonight in South Florida, the two best teams in the Atlantic Division, squaring off with a trip to the NHL's Final Four on the line. Florida rallied from a 3-1 deficit to stun Boston in round one a year ago, and the Bruins need to exercise those Game 7 overtime demons Saturday night to beat Toronto and keep their season alive.
And Kentucky Derby. Mystic Dan claims closest three-horse finish since at Derby since 1947, Dateline Louisville, Kentucky. The 150th Kentucky Derby produced one of the most dramatic finishes in its storied history, three noses at the wire. Mystic Dan desperately fought to hang on with two challengers coming to him in the closing strides. He did too, after a delay of several minutes while the closest three-horse photo finish since 1947 was sorted out. That year, Jet Pilot won by a head over Phalanx, who was another head in front of Faultless. This one was much tighter. Mystic Dan, an 18-1 shot, edged Sierra Leone by a nose, with Forever Young another nose back in third on Saturday. Sierra Leone was the most expensive horse in the race at $2.3 million. That concludes the reading of the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette. This morning's reading of the journal will repeat later today at 6 p.m. Today, Monday, May the 6th, we're sending birthday greetings to listener Kathy H. of Decatur and volunteer Margie M., who is a substitute recorder reader. So, happy birthday to you both, and for anyone else out there who's got a birthday, happy birthday to you too. Your readers today have been Giles with
Anita.
We invite you to stay tuned for the next program.